Hey guys, welcome to the Amber May Show. I'm your host, Amber May. I'm glad you're a part of this. Always check the links below. There's something I am working on to help business owners get some money that they need to run their business from the government. I'm working on that. So check the link below. Even if you watch this video, go back in a little while because I'm working on that link and check it out because I want to help you with your small business or your large business to help you get the money that you need that the government already set aside for you. Also, hey, I have a big show, huge show, like ginormous show. So it's going to be a little bit longer than my normal program, but bear with me. I'm going to post every link that I have from all the videos that I'm going to show you in the description. So make sure you go into the description if you want to see all in its entirety. And I would say to you, I would really recommend that you do it all in its entirety because I think what you got to see is really important. Okay. But I have a video I want you to see because I want to help you build legacy wealth for your family. I want to help with sustainable tax-free retirement. The national average people running out of money in retirement is 10 years. Let that not be you. Let that not be you. I want to help you when big expenses come your way that you have the money to get that taken care of without going into debt. Let me help you with that. Let's set up a 15-20 minute conversation. Check the link below. There is a video that kind of gives a sum up of what I'm talking about. So check that out. Also, natural health is something I'm really into. I love my essential oils. There's a link to essential oils, especially after all the shenanigans going on with the last couple years. I think it's important. I got my Hey Marty, why does it block me? Hey Marty, whatever happens, don't go back to 2020. It has a DeLorean on it. I have that shirt. I love this shirt. I feel like that's my shirt. Okay, so again, it's going to be a little bit longer than normal, but you need to watch the whole entire thing. So watch the links below as well. So I'm going to. This is from Project Veritas. Let me just pull it up. Okay, let me try times two. Let me try this again. Okay, this is from Project Veritas, so you can see the whole thing in its entirety.
Babies like don't need to get vaccinated. Then why do you think there's such a strong push for it?
You just don't do that.
Right.
Not something that's so unknown in terms of the projects down the road.
Yeah. You really don't need to vaccinate. You really don't need to vaccinate. It's in your, you take, especially if it's not going to school, it's not going to it's in your house.
So what would you say? Homeschool or get the vaccine?
Honestly, I don't think it could be something.
If it were your kid, would you get them vaccinated?
I don't think they need it.
It's killed over 200,000 people. Not 10 people. He said, I personally know 8 people who died from it. I said, one of them was a 12-year-old boy.
Wow, did you just see that? They're killing people. They're killing, it killed over 200,000 people. That's more than we're hearing from the VAERS report. Okay. The agenda with the guys in the elite, they have this religious belief that they have to protect our earth from overpopulation. I know it's so hard for us to believe this because normal people don't think like this. But I'm going to show you later on in the show as we go on how we've all been programmed for a long time with the Project Mockingbird, and we don't want to believe that we have been brainwashed. Because that's really a horrible thing to think about. Like, I've been brainwashed that I'm capable of being brainwashed. Yeah, because it's so easy to do. So we'll get that into it. But that was Johnson and Johnson. And both of those guys who work for Johnson and Johnson got the Moderna shot. They didn't even get the Johnson and Johnson shot. Okay, so let me show you. Okay, this is a whistleblower from the HHS. Here we go.
Being
I
done
bet you
because
just have
the government doesn't want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
Tell us about who this person is.
Dr. Gonzalez is one of our emergency room doctors at Phoenix Indian Medical Center.
And she's a federal employee?
Correct.
Now you got this guy in room 4 who got his second dose of vaccine on Tuesday, has been short of breath.
He's got brewing myocarditis.
Yes.
Oh, this is bullshit.
Let's see.
Probably myocarditis due to the vaccine.
Right.
But now they're not going to blame the vaccine.
Well, and you know what? But he has an obligation to report that, doesn't he?
They are not reporting.
Right.
Because they want to shove it under the under the mat.
What patient was she referring to?
She was referring to that patient, that 30-something-year-old patient that had congestive heart failure.
And in that particular patient's case, it was not reported.
No.
The problem in here, they are not doing the studies. People that had it, you know, and the people that have been vaccinated, they're not doing any antibody testing.
It's super fishy.
Not that it hasn't been done. It hasn't been published.
It hasn't probably been done because the government doesn't want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
The government doesn't want to show that the vaccine is full of shit.
It's not doing what its purpose was.
I want to stop the video for a second because that's not entirely true. The vaccine is full of shit. It really is.
I see your badges. You're Jody O'Malley with the Department of Health and Human Services. This is the United States government identification. I'm looking at the CDC website. It says that you're required to report adverse events following vaccinations. One of those would be congestive heart failure.
Yeah, it's a huge one.
Were there other instances that they didn't report?
Oh, I've seen dozens of people come in with an adverse reaction.
Yeah, it's really sad. She had just come back from surgery from leave.
So what are we looking at here?
You're looking at me transferring her to a higher level of care that could handle her condition.
And this is a colleague at your hospital who got sick.
She didn't want to take it because of her religious beliefs. And she was coerced into taking it.
Why are you choosing to blow the whistle? It's not what a lot of people would do. They're scared, they're afraid. Are you afraid?
I wouldn't necessarily say I'm afraid because my faith lies in God and not man. This is evil at the highest level. You have the FDA, you have the CDC, that are both supposed to be protecting us.
Are you afraid they're going to retaliate against you?
Yeah. I'm a federal employee. What other federal employees do you see coming out?
But you put your faith in God.
Amen.
The government doesn't want to show that the darn vaccine is full of shit.
Holy shit.
Okay, let's talk about the vaccine full of shit.
What do you think about going from human 1.0 to human 2.0? And what does that mean? Well, going from humans as we now know ourselves to human 2.0 has something to do with transhumanism. If you're not familiar with that term, it's about taking humans as we know ourselves and melding with artificial intelligence. Kind of like being in the Matrix, if you've ever seen that movie. And that may seem kind of cool to you. We might have some superhuman abilities, maybe be able to think of something and it happens, maybe have some physical abilities that would be almost superhuman-like. That's the idea. That's what you see in sci-fi movies. And for myself, thinking about this topic, I'm like, well, I have some time. I think that's many years in the future. However, this question, this idea is now right in this moment. We need to make a decision. And I found out that we need to make a decision about this because I investigated the proposed COVID-19 vaccine. And this is my alarm call to the world. I looked at the pros and cons and it frightens me. And I want you to know about this. You need to be very well informed because this new vaccine is not like your normal flu vaccine. This is something very different. This is something brand new. This is something completely experimental on the human race. And it's not just about being a different vaccine. There are technologies that are being introduced with this vaccine that can change the way we live, who we are, and what we are, and very quickly. I think that, you know, some people that you might know these names, Elon Musk, who is the founder of SpaceX and Tesla Automotive, as well as Ray Kurzweil, who is one of the big wigs of Google. These are self-proclaimed transhumanists. They believe that we should go to human 2.0, and they are very big proponents of this. There's a lot of other people that you might know their names. They're also involved with this, so you should look that up. I think the easiest way to explain this to you is to go with one of the front runners for the vaccine and go into a little bit of the history and tell you how they want to make the vaccine. And I think that will speak volumes. So for instance, Moderna is one of the front runners for the COVID-19 vaccine. You should know that Moderna was founded by a person from Harvard, Derek Rossi, and this researcher actually was successful in taking some modified RNA and being able to reprogram a stem cell in the body and change the function of the stem cell. He actually made it genetically modified, okay? So he proved that you can genetically modify something by using modified RNA. So they founded the company Moderna on this concept. It's kind of a new kid on the block, okay? It's not been around that long. In fact, it hasn't even made any vaccine for a human before. It's made no medicine for a human before. This will be their first run. You must know that Moderna was in the news recently because it really fast-tracked. It's like the other companies, it's fast-tracking the vaccine. It's going from phase one to phase two very, very quickly. In fact, it's gone from phase one to phase three in its experiments from March of this year until currently. I mean, that is unbelievable. It usually takes 5 or 6 years. How are they able to do this with the safety and efficacy data that we need? And I want you to know that in phase two, they're only using between 30 and 45 humans. In Moderna's test study, they only used 45 humans. And with the high dose vaccine group, they got 100% of those people got systemic side effects, 100. That's only in the short side effect profile. In the low dose vaccine, 80% got systemic side effects. Now, we don't even know the long-term side effects from that. We would need a lot longer time, right? Maybe years. But we do know, based on previous animal studies of using this technology, that you can expect possibly increased cancer rates, increased mutant genes, mutagenesis, also increased autoimmune reactions. For instance, in some of the ferret studies, they saw that when the ferret was introduced to the virus that they were trying to protect the ferret from after the ferret got the vaccine, they actually had an exaggerated immune response. It actually hurt the ferret. They had more lung inflammation, more lung fluid, even some problems with their liver. It actually hurt them. They had a poorer response. Okay, so those are longer term reactions, and that could be seen with this vaccine, but we don't know the data yet. So it's not without risk. And how are they doing this? Well, they're actually suggesting to use a platform. Let me just explain how they would administer the vaccine. So the vaccine, there's an idea called microneedle platform, okay? This was developed by MIT. And they said it could be very easily produced, okay, and mass produced. This is why they're proposing this technology, and many millions of vaccines could be made quickly. They could also be administered by yourself. So the idea is to get a Band-Aid. It looks like a Band-Aid you buy in the drugstore. It's shipped to you through Amazon or UPS or some other shipping service. You take it out of the package, you put it on your hand like this, and then you take the sticker off and voila, you've been vaccinated. So how is that possible? Well, in this Band-Aid, it has little tiny spicules, little tiny needles. And this was designed after a snake viper fang bite, okay, or snake viper bangs. So little snake bites. Anyway, in these tiny little spicules, they claim you won't really feel it that much. There's their little hydrogel. It's a material called hydrogel. Inside the hydrogel would be a luciferase enzyme as well as the vaccine itself. Okay, so what is all that? So first of all, you're getting the vaccine. It's modified RNA or modified DNA. Let's take Moderna, modified RNA. So in that modified RNA, the idea is that the microneedles would puncture into your cell membrane, okay? And this synthetic piece of an RNA, it's a code for the part of the virus, or they could use a synthetic DNA, it's a code for the part of the virus, would go into your nucleus, your body would start transcribing it, would start reading it, and making more of that part of the virus. Well, why would we want to make more of the virus or part of the virus? The idea is your body would get used to seeing it, would know how to make antibodies, and would have an improved T cell response. And the idea is then when you saw it in the future, your body would already know how to fight it and it would be a better response. That's the idea. The problem with that is they're using something called a process called transfection. And transfection is a way that we make genetically modified organisms. Okay, I think you know about those fruits and vegetables. They're not as healthy as the normal wild type fruit and vegetable. So possibly you could extrapolate that to a human. If we become genetically modified, we would not be as healthy, okay? We don't have long-term studies on this anyway. This is unbelievable. And, you know, the vaccine manufacturers have made the statement, this will not alter our DNA, our genome. I say that is not true. Because if we use this process to make a genetically modified organism, why would it not do the same thing to a human? I don't know why they're saying that. Now, if you look at the definition of transfection, it'll tell you that it can be a temporary change in the cell. And I think that's what the vaccine manufacturers are banking on. It's temporary. Or it's a possibility for it to become stable, to be taken up into the genome, and so stable that it will start replicating when the genome replicates, meaning it is now a permanent part of your genome. That's a chance that we're taking. So it could be temporary or it could be permanent. And we would never know that for years down the road, honestly. So here we go. We've got something that can alter our genome. It's a possibility. And another thing on that, if they're altering the genome, what would be the effects? I told you previously some of the side effects, but also we need to know that this is a synthetic piece of DNA or RNA, okay? And if it becomes taken up into the genome of a human, it's synthetic, it's not from nature. And if you look at the Supreme Court justice ruling on synthetic DNA or genes, it can be patented, and patents have owners. So what does that mean for us? What if this gets into our genome? Does that mean Moderna or the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation or the Department of Defense, all of these people who are involved in the patents, or are they somehow going to own part of our genome? It's a possibility. You need to know that. So that's one part of this delivery system, just one. Now let me go to the next. The next part of the delivery system is a luciferase enzyme. Okay, they named it, they patented it luciferase. I don't like that name. Luciferase because it has bioluminescent qualities, which means it can produce a light or it has a light source. And all of this would be under your skin and you cannot see it. Now, the luciferase is an idea because they want to make sure that you're vaccinated. They don't trust medical records. They don't trust you saying that you got vaccinated. They want to make sure, and they want to make sure it was successful, a successful transfection, a successful gene modification. So when you get the luciferase enzyme, if you have an iPhone or a special app on the iPhone, you can scan over that area and it will give a digital code, a digital imprint, a digital pattern, something that will identify that you were vaccinated. It holds your vaccination record. It also gives you an ID. a number, a barcode, a branding, whatever you want to call it, a tattoo, it's all the same thing. You now become like a product. So we have that.
Okay, I'm going to pause it because it's a long video and I want to get on to other things. So I did that one. Okay, now listen to this. This is military personnel should pay close attention to this.
Previous video, I discussed with Simone Gold her Colorado lawsuit where an affidavit has been filed, an explosive affidavit from a top medical flight surgeon in the United States Army who gets to decide who gets to fly or not. And evidently, it's becoming quite a problem for her. She's having to ground dozens and dozens of Army pilots. Because if you've had COVID and then you take the vaccine, you're at enhanced risk of antigen dependent enhancement, ADE, which is associated with myocarditis and emboli and all kinds of bad things, which pilots can't have, and she's having to ground them. And I understand, I have not yet read the affidavit, but it's at least been communicated to me that she's considering having to ground everybody in the Army who's had the vaccine off flight status. Well, here's the problem with that. You know who is on flight status? Pilots, of course, pilots in the Army. And there's, you thought our Army doesn't have pilots, so it has helicopter pilots, has big cargo planes, has lots of pilots. A lot of people also have flight status. Among them, I think everybody in the special operations community. I'm talking, you know, from Green Berets and Rangers. Well, I don't know Rangers. Anyone who does Halo jumping, SEALs, Navy SEALs, probably Air Force. Anyone in that special, MARSOC, they have to be able to Halo. And to Halo, you have to have a flight. You have the same check that pilots do, same flight physical. Because you have to, every 5 years, you got to be taken in a hypobaric chamber up to 20,000 feet or something and decompressed. And so they have the same flight physical. And now the Army medical official in charge of flight physicals is saying, it has given an affidavit. The details of the affidavit are to be read, but I understand that there was even talk of grounding everybody in the Army who's had that vaccine. So at this point, now I've already gotten this communicated to a lawyer who's representing a bunch of Navy SEALs, because the word is that about 30% of the Navy SEAL community is about to walk off the job. Well, they need to know in their lawsuit, and you should get this to anybody, get this link to anybody in the Navy SEAL community involved in that case. There's now an Army chief flight surgeon who is saying, people who've taken that shot, I have to, in the Army, I've got to ground. Well, if you're in the Navy and, you know, you're in the special operations community, you fly, you know, I'm sure Navy SEALs have to worry about their heart and lungs a lot. You now have, your case now just was handed a first strike weapon. You have a chief medical officer from another branch saying, this, you get this shot, it could ruin your career. You may have to be grounded or whatever the Navy pilot or SEAL equivalent of that is. And everyone across the special operations community has to be aware of this. So I can't give you medical advice, of course. That's up to you and your doctors and your gods and everything else. But we'll be posting this affidavit that's been provided in a lawsuit, affidavit provided by a chief top medical official of the United States Army. And you have to question whether this is going to, you should let this factor into your own personal decision about the vaccine. Patrick Byrne at the America Project.
So think about the ramifications of that. Now imagine we don't have military to help us fight wars. Imagine how we're sitting ducks now that we don't have the capacity to fly airplanes because it could kill a pilot or it could severely injure the pilot. That's a very scary thought, but this is reality of where we're at. If you think your government cares about you, you're sadly mistaken. I want you to listen to this doctor over here in Canada. Now, this one's a virologist, and I want you to listen to his portion of it, but you're going to have to listen to it in the links that I provide. The next doctor is going to talk about treatments and how the shot is really not necessary because we have these treatments. But he's super nervous. He's scared of losing his job. There has to be something inside of you to start questioning how come these medical professionals are getting threatened to losing their license just by offering another source of medication or treatment. That should be like a big alarm for you. Hello, wake up, guys. Take the red pill because something ain't right here. So this is Canadian doctors.
This has happened, okay? But as Canadians, we have to ask ourselves, do you want your physicians and scientists, their voices suppressed? We're polarized right now. We're polarized in Canada. We have people on both sides. We have to understand, we're just as passionate. We feel that we are trying to look after the best interests. We're doing our cost-benefit analysis, for example, in my case with children. And I honestly feel that by proceeding with vaccination right now, without conducting the proper safety tests, we may do more harm than good. I'm passionate about that, but I'm respectful of those who hold the opposite opinion. I would ask for the same for myself and my colleagues. We can't suppress open discussion of science and medicine in Canada. It's a hallmark of a democratic society. Okay, and one of the other things I want to point out is I'm here representing physicians, scientists, members of the media who feel suppressed, and I've also been asked to represent some politicians who approached me privately who feel that their jobs are at risk, and MP Derek Sloan can certainly attest to what happens if you speak up too much about, you know, trying to have open discussions. Okay, so I want to end here, but I want to point out that Dr. Patrick Phillips is going to be speaking in a few minutes. And I want you to know that he's one physician, but it represents hundreds, all right? I have been contacted by hundreds of physicians who support his viewpoint, and he is going to present with you some things that will allow us to safely pause these vaccines. Because somebody like Patrick Phillips and his colleagues have effective strategies for preventing and treating COVID-19 that would allow us to take a pause on these vaccines, okay? So right now, I don't recognize the country that I was born into, and I would simply ask all Canadians, please.
Neither do I.
I simply want us to learn to respect one another again. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Byram, and thank you very much,
this
Derek,
man is very
for
nervous.
Organizing this and having us
everything's
here.
On the line.
I've been told we're pressed for time, so I will be brief. But I want to bring up my main point that I'm a family physician. I practice medicine in the town of Englehart, Ontario, primarily in the emergency department of Blanche River Health. And I first got into speaking out, seeing the massive harms from these lockdowns on my patients. I've never seen so many suicidal children. I've never seen so many cases of people coming into the emergency department for the first time with metastatic cancer. And seeing those harms, I made a decision to myself that I knew that I couldn't live with myself if I did not speak out. And the reason I was afraid to speak out was because there were rumors in the medical community that the college was coming after people who chose to do that. And I've had many brave predecessors before me, like Dr. Kulvinder Gill, who bravely spoke out anyways. What happened this spring, on April 30th, the College of Physicians and Surgeons of Ontario came out with a very chilling statement, basically saying that it's the professional responsibility of all physicians not to communicate anti-vaccine, anti-masking, anti-distancing and anti-lockdown statements and or promoting unsupported, unproven treatments for COVID-19. They were very explicit and threatened investigation and discipline for any physicians who express any of the negative aspects of any of these interventions, no matter what the evidence says. And I have to say, over this last year, I've done a lot of research. I've looking into the evidence around lockdowns, but especially around treatments. And I want to especially make a point around a few treatments. One of them, for example, is vitamin D, which our health minister has named fake news. But I want to emphasize that there's over 85 studies and 27 treatment trials. Many of these are peer-reviewed scientific literature that have shown a 56% reduction in mortality in patients who take vitamin D compared to those who don't for COVID-19. But even more so, because that was very early on, what we've learned in these last few months is about ivermectin. We have on our hands a very safe treatment that's won a Nobel Prize. Billions of doses have been administered throughout the world because it's a commonly used antiparasitic that's over the counter in many countries around the world. And world-leading scientific and physician researchers, Dr. Paul Merrick and Dr. Pierre Corey, have been shouting from the rooftops around this medication, because at this point we have 97 studies and over 30 randomized control trials that have shown a huge benefit to this medication in reducing the risk of death and hospitalization in patients who have COVID. And not only does this treat patients with COVID, especially when you give it early, but there is also a role, and there's 14 randomized control trials for prophylaxis, meaning taking this medication for high-risk patients early, it can reduce your chance of catching COVID in the first place, which is especially relevant for long-term care homes and for healthcare workers in hospitals. And at this point, the College of Physicians has launched investigations against many of my colleagues, including myself, threatening to take our licenses away for promoting what they call unproven treatments, but what the scientific peer-reviewed literature shows is very well supported in the science around these treatments. And so I've made a decision to myself, likewise, like when I decided to speak out about lockdowns, that I could not live with myself. If I have a patient sitting in front of me who has COVID-19 and they can't breathe, or they're at high risk of being hospitalized or dying, I can't just stand in front of them knowing what I know, a 75% reduction in mortality, and not give this to my patients. But more so, seeing what's happening with the Ontario Science Table, not recommending this medication, even recommending against vitamin D, which I think is unthinkable because the harm is none. This is a natural substance. And they're telling us not to give this to these patients despite mortality benefit. I know there's something going wrong, and I knew I needed to speak out no matter what the college does to my license. Because at this point, there's bigger things going on than my career. And I thank Byron for...
Now let's talk about bigger things going on in your career. Now, Clay Clark had Reawaken America tour, and this lady is phenomenal. I'm hoping I can get her on my program, because everything she said is exactly what I have learned is going on in our country. So let's check this out. This just happened over the weekend, and he has a couple more coming up, and then it's done. But you can watch the Reawaken tour on his channel, and I'll post the link.
Honor to be in front of people who give a darn about this country and are willing to show it by coming out to events like these. So for those of you who don't know, my name is Lee Dundas, and my mama gave me extra letters. That's L-E-I-G-H-D-U-N-D-A-S. You can find me on Facebook under Lee Dundas. There's an Australian chef who's a guy. That's not me. And then there's another Lee Dundas. That's me. But yeah, I'm hard to find. I'm only out of jail about once every 60 days. So your best bet is to find me at leedundas.com and sign up there. I'm not going to sell you anything, but that's where you can find me. And I want to talk to you guys a little bit today, if you're okay with this, about our government. Yeah, I think they deserve a little limelight. About our government. And I want to talk to the folks, none of the people in here really, but the folks out there who think our government has our back and has been doing us a solid with their coronavirus pandemic response this last year. I am here to tell you something, listen loud and listen clear. They are not doing us a solid. What they are doing is allowing, if not spearheading, a totalitarian, communist meets fascist takeover. And they're doing it from our White House in Washington, D.C., and that is absolutely impermissible, and we are going to change that.
Yep, and we're going to change that with the Arizona audit that came out and proved that Joe Biden did not win Arizona. There was over 50-something thousand fraudulent votes. So Arizona is working on decertifying our electors. We just need two more people to decertify, two more states, and he's out of office.
But one of the ways we're going to change it, because you cannot defeat what you don't recognize. You cannot handle something you don't know you need to confront. So one of the things we're going to do today is look at the totalitarian takeover handbook, because there is a five-step Betty Crocker recipe that every bad dictator, that every guy who spearheaded a genocide or another type of human rights atrocity used to do what he did. And we are going to learn it. And your job is to know it like the back of your own hand, so you know exactly what is going on, and to go back to your homes, in your cities, in your counties, in your states, and make darn sure everybody else recognizes these five steps as well. And then we're going to talk about a little bit of our government's inglorious debacled past to firmly disabuse anybody out there, because I don't think there's anybody in here, but anybody out there who thinks or is clinging to the notion that our government would never knowingly hurt an American citizen or try to program us. And then we're gonna fast forward to the end, because that's where we win. And I don't know about you, but I'm darn tired of living in the purgatory in between the beginning and the end of the story. So back to the totalitarian takeover. There's five steps, as I mentioned before. And the first step is they whip society into an absolute frenzy over absolutely nothing. They typically pin it to a disease-based hook on which to hang their hat, because that more effectively triggers our lizard brain. That throws us into a state of fight or flight. That makes us shoot adrenaline. And once you are in that panicked, frenzied state, you take off your critical thinking cap and you become very, very susceptible to what is known as signal input, which is brainwashing data. Because you're busy running from the thing that you think is chasing you, and you're not critically reasoning in the interim. While they are doing this, they engage in some depersonalization techniques, right? They engage in depersonalization techniques because you can't just take a German who is best friends with a Jew in 1930 Germany and say, tomorrow you're going to kill your neighbor. There's a ramp-up process to that. And it starts by making you hate your neighbor and think that they are less than human. So in Nazi Germany, they referred to the Jews as rats, as subhuman. And in Rwanda, in that genocide, they referred to the persecuted class as cockroaches. And so it goes until in the final analysis, when you are asked to commit the ultimate atrocity and burn your neighbor in an oven or shoot them down in the street, you can do it, because you're just hunting big game at that point, right? It always starts with a false flag event. What is a false flag event? A false flag event is something that looks like X but was designed to allow Y to occur, and Y is very definitely not X. So in Hitler's Germany, it was the burning of the Reichstag building. It was a government building. A fire happened. A lot of people think that Hitler set it himself, but regardless of who actually set the fire, the Nazis ran around the country saying, the commies set the fire. The communists are after us. The communists are hunting us. And we need to protect ourselves. We need to change our laws to protect ourselves from this communist threat. And so they did. Hitler changed 400 laws in 6 years, not to permit them to remain safe from the communist threat. That was the cover story. But to enable Hitler to burn human beings in ovens. That was his ultimate agenda. So don't ever forget about depersonalization or the false flag event. What is our false flag event? We have a coronavirus epidemic, allegedly. I'm not a virus denier. Yeah, there's a virus. 99.9% survivable. Why are we using that as an excuse to gut our Constitution and eviscerate every last piece of civil liberties protection we ever had? We need to stand up against this. The second piece of this, step two in the totalitarian takeover en route to genocide, is they blame a group as being responsible. The Jews carry disease, don't you know? We need to segregate them and put them in their own camps so they're not giving us typhoid and typhus and whatever else. Of course, the Jews and Germans had lived happily together for years and decades prior to this time, but nonetheless, nobody was thinking about that because they were all adrenalized. We know who the persecuted, responsible group is in 2021, do we not? It's the unvaxxed, unmasked. We're gonna get all of us off the main roads of society. The third step is they use media to disenfranchise the class they are hunting and persecuting, to brainwash the masses to go along with the plan to persecute your neighbor. And similarly, they use brainwashing in the media to convince the hunted class that they truly are subhuman and they should not bother fighting back at all. Because let me tell you guys, it is much easier to win a war when you have convinced the other side don't even bother to fight before we get there with our tanks, right?
Let me pause this. Check this out. Hey, listen to this, just really quick, and then I'm going to get back to her.
Everything you read, hear, and watch, from the biggest movie studios, television and radio networks, newspapers and magazines, to the vast universe of internet news and entertainment sites.
Amazon has transformed its operations in response to COVID-19 to protect employees and keep packages flowing.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy while still delivering those packages to the doorstep.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
The company is keeping its employees safe and healthy.
Millions of Americans staying at home are relying on
Amazon.
And that is how it works. It's like a house of mirrors where you're seeing the same thing over and over and over again, except it's distorted.
There's an industry that is paid to go after and target journalists, whistleblowers, and inundate our consciousness and the images we see to try to ruin, destroy, or smear the idea that they don't like or the person who's delivering it.
You smear somebody with falsehoods and all the rest, and then you merchandise it. And then you write it, and they'll say, see, it's reported in the press, so they have that validation that the press reported the smear, and then it's called the wrap-up smear. Now I'm going to merchandise the press's report on the smear that we made. And it's a tactic.
News personalities are not the only high-paid actors to serve the propaganda machine. Most late-night talk shows are owned by the same corporate overlords and thus follow the same script. Only laced with a laugh.
Our main story tonight concerns conspiracy theories.
Last Week Tonight with John Oliver featured a skit entitled Coronavirus Conspiracy Theories.
It's like the claim that the moon landing was faked.
First thing to note here is that Mr. Oliver opens with commentary about conspiracy theories that are completely unrelated to coronavirus. This is a standard tactic used by propagandists to set a tone so that anything that follows will be seen through the lens of absurdity.
Plandemic, a pseudo-documentary filled with a hodgepodge of conspiracy theories.
Mr. Oliver then does his best to debunk Dr. Judy's claim that she was arrested but never charged with a crime.
She was absolutely criminally charged.
This was not an oversight, but a blatant lie. Prior to the taping of this episode, Mr. Oliver had the official arrest documents that clearly prove that Dr. Judy was never charged with a crime.
Okay, now let me get back to this lady. Leah Dunnis.
So that is how they do it. That is how they do it. Do you think for a single solitary second that the atrocities of World War II could have happened if CNN was up in the middle of Auschwitz with one of these and one of those? Heck no. Let it be a lesson to you. Do not ever let go of this, especially now. Fourth step of the totalitarian takeover. is they mark you, the hunted class. They need to know who you are so they know where you are so they can take all of you and put you in a little camp for your safety and for our safety. And they give you passports, and they restrict your travel, and you can't go into certain places unless you show your papers, please. And they give you armbands that you wear, and they give you stars to put in your window, and they don't allow you to shop at certain stores, and some of you can only shop here, and some of you can only shop there. That's step four. Step five is a step you don't recover from. It is the final step. It is where you burn your neighbor in an oven, or you mass rape an entire population, or you medically experiment them on them. Do not ever get to step five, because there is no coming back from step five. But I have a question for you. I want you to honestly cull through your memory banks and let me know in the last 18 months exactly how many steps we have gone through in just 18 months. We're at four, other countries are already at five. That's right. So I want to focus on step three a little bit. Step three, the media. Everybody thinks Hitler won the wars that he did, the battles he did before he finally lost the ultimate one, because of his war machine. Oh, no, 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 no. He won what he won because of his PR machine. The very first thing he did is he got rid of the free press and he got rid of the cops. That man didn't want cops to stand up against him or a military. Make no mistake, that man wanted an SS and a Gestapo that said, Heil Hitler, and goose stepped on command, and he did not want CNN up in his business. It was called Voices of America at the time. So he got rid of the journalists and he got rid of the cops. And then he installed Joseph Goebbels as his PR minister. There was a minister for propaganda. And the first thing they did is they closed non-essential businesses. That was the thing they divined was going to be the most successful thing they could do at the outset to get them where they were going to go on the final step. And then they closed the churches, and then they closed the schools, got rid of the cops, pitted everybody against each other, started race wars. Sound familiar? They passed an editor's law that prohibited the publication of any news, anything, in print, on the radio, unless it was lockstep in keeping with the socialist propaganda of the time. You had to be bowing down to the socialist agenda if you wanted to get anything in print. Their PR machine had seven different departments: administration and legal, mass rallies, public health, youth and race, radio, national and foreign press, film, film censorship, art, music and theater, and protection against counter-propaganda, i.e. the truth, both foreign and domestic. Make no mistake, guys, this was no teeny tiny PR machine. This was a PR machine that would get this guy to be willing to kill that guy at the end of the war, even though they had been best friends a few years earlier. That was the kind of PR machine this guy was working. A committee was established to censor books, and then art, and then music, and then the cabaret. You had to prove your Aryan heritage going back to the 1800s if you wanted to publish anything. Free radios were given out on Joseph Goebbels' birthday, not because they were being generous or nice or because the government had their back and was doing them a solid, but because they wanted the means to brainwash every single person. And then they put loudspeakers in every single school, in every single factory, in every single town square, because they wanted to drown the Germans in the propaganda that they were putting forth. And they were successful. At the end of the war, Hitler's minister for war stated, and I quote, "The regime made the complete use of all technical means for domination of its own country through technical devices like radio and loudspeaker." 80 million people! 80 million people! Were deprived of independent thought. They put you to death if you spoke the truth. They put you to death if you listened to the truth. And in that manner, by the end of the war, They could take a microphone like this on open airwaves and talk brazenly and overtly about their fact and their plan to execute the Jews and the manner in which they were going to do it and get zero pushback. So now I want to talk to you. We will repeat the sins of past if we don't know our history. Now I want to talk to you about what we've been doing since 1940 Germany in our country. In the beginning of the Cold War, with reference to censorship, the US government decided it wanted to influence mass public opinion through mass media. And so they started this little project. You guys may have heard of it, Operation Mockingbird. Project Mockingbird. And the CIA, the US Central Intelligence Agency, was tasked with going out and recruiting members of the press, news anchors, journalists, you name it, into their ranks, and simultaneously and conversely, the CIA took their operatives and put them into these news outlets. This is not a conspiracy theory. After about 20 years of this, Congress got wind of this nefarious little program, along with some other nefarious programs, and they convened evidentiary hearings known as the Church Committee in the late 1970s. And that committee found that the CIA indeed cultivated relationships, including the press, and without identifying any individuals by name, the Church Committee stated it found 50 journalists who had official but secret relationships with the CIA. Rolling Stone came out a month later and said, nice try, guys. It was closer to 400. 400, including Arthur Hayes, Stuart Alsop, and Time Magazine, which were anybody who was everybody back in those days. Declassified documents confirmed this program existed, although they never confirmed the name. And in that manner, they never had to confirm that they had done away with the program by that name. The closest we get is George Bush the First, during his time at the CIA, saying, hey, we're not going to pay, the CIA is not going to pay journalists anymore. We're going to stop doing that little thing. But he went on to say that the CIA welcomed the voluntary unpaid cooperation of journalists. And thus, many relationships were permitted to remain intact. So a lot of people, including yours truly, think that maybe Operation Mockingbird was never actually officially disbanded at all. Maybe our narratives through the media are being a little bit pulled by puppet strings. But I gotta tell you, it doesn't matter what I think. No one person is gonna win the war we're in today. Not me, not any generals, not any presidents, not any politicians, not any doctors, not any great lawyers. This war is gonna be won by you. You need to know the history. You need to own the data. So we're gonna do a little show and tell, kindergarten style, and we're gonna watch a 1 minute clip, and then you're gonna let me know your thoughts. Can you guys roll the video, Devin?
I am Fox San Antonio's Jessica Headley.
And I'm Ryan Wolf.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities.
The El Paso, Las Cruces communities.
Eastern Iowa communities.
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But
we are concerned about truly responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and false
news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media Unfortunately, some members of the media use their platforms to push their own personal bias and agenda to control exactly what people think, and this is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
The media is
being controlled? Think it's a little dangerous to the democracy? Oh, the irony, right? So just to be clear, the Holocaust was never the result of Hitler. We're all tempted to demonize that man, and he's no angel, don't get me wrong. The Holocaust was the result of mass media censorship and people who were overly obedient, and I want to talk to you for a second about obedience. In 1961, a university professor at Yale decided he was going to figure out if the Holocaust was the result of a one-off unicorn episode in our history and it was never going to recur again, or if maybe, just maybe, the Holocaust was the result of something inside of us that made us predisposed to being overly obedient to authority. And so he created a study where he invited everybody out there, doctors, lawyers, homemakers, retired folk, janitors, he invited a man to take part in a memory experiment. And once these guys came in, they were paired up, and you and I would be paired up as twins, and we were asked to memorize arbitrary pairs of words. So when I said purple, my buddy was supposed to say zebra. And then we were separated, and we were put into separate rooms where we could not see each other, but we could hear each other through an intercom. And I would say zebra, and he was supposed to say purple, or whatever the right answer was. And when he said Kalamazoo, I was supposed to negatively reinforce his wrong answer by flipping a switch that gave him a dose of electricity, because he had been wired with electrodes. And I was to shock my neighbor to make him perform better and not get any more wrong answers. And my switchboard went from about a 9-volt switch, not fatal, we've all licked a 9-volt battery, right? Maybe I'm the only one, okay? You kind of go, that tastes bad. I shouldn't do that again when you're 8 years old. 9 volts all the way up to 450 volts. And for those of you who suck at math and science like I do, 450 volts is a fatal dose of electricity. That is an electric chair dose of electricity. Unbeknownst to me, nobody was actually being shocked in the other room. I was hearing pre-recorded wrong and right answers from my neighbor, including sounds of pain as I flipped higher and higher switches. So in the beginning, it was, ugh, that hurt. And then as I got into the higher voltages, it was abject screaming. Hey man, you gotta stop it, you gotta stop it. I had a heart attack last year. My heart's already skipping beats. You keep doing this, you're gonna kill me. Which would create no small amount of dissonance and upset cognitively at my end. And the person in my shoes would turn to the guy in a position of authority in charge of the memory experiment and say, hey man, I'm not okay continuing to shock my neighbor in there. I think I'm gonna kill him if I keep this up. And for his part, the position of authority man, the doctor in the white lab coat with Dr. So-and-so on his lapel, was not supposed to hold a gun to my head and say, you gotta finish the experiment. He didn't lock the door and say I couldn't leave. He was just supposed to say a couple words. Go ahead and continue. Please continue. And the question was, what percent of Americans would nuke their neighbor to death over a wrong answer on a memory quiz because somebody in a position of authority said they had to? And when Stanley Milgram shopped this idea around the college to all of his fellow professors, they told him in a nutshell, dude, you're high. Nobody's going to kill their neighbor because you told them they had to. And when he actually ran the study, what he realized is 2 out of 3 normal, law-abiding, Christian, God-fearing men and women who didn't have so much as a speeding ticket would kill their neighbor because somebody said they had to. We are hardwired to be obedient. Being obedient in a free America, in a first world country, is a sign, it's like a badge that says, I grew up in a free constitutional republic, and I can rely on my 3 branches of government to have my back and do right by me. Make no mistake, when you are living in a communist country, when you are living in a totalitarian takeover, when you are living in the middle of hell, when you are obedient to bad authority, you die. You die. I'm gonna say it one more time, and you're gonna say it back. When you are obedient, you what?
Die.
Don't ever forget. Don't ever forget. Teach your children well. So now that we've walked through the worst parts of history, I want to talk to you about hope. There was, because this is how this ends. There was a little guy by the name of Kurt Richter at Harvard who did a gruesome study on rats. He wanted to figure out how long rats would swim in Nevada water before they gave it up and died. And he put his little domesticated lab rats in the water, and they swam 15 minutes before they died. And then he thought, well, these are my domesticated lab rats. They're kind of fat, they're kind of lazy. They've got a human who feeds them 3 square meals a day. I'm gonna put wild rats in here. And I'm gonna see how these wild rats descended from Christopher Columbus ship rats who had to swim for the nearest island. I'm gonna see how these suckers fare. They did worse. They did worse. And Kurt Richter was sitting there going, what the? My domesticated fat lab rats outperformed my wild rats? What the heck? And he surmised that maybe it had something to do with the factor of hope. Maybe the domesticated lab rats knew there was a little thing called a human being who came in and fed them a couple of times a day and were holding out hope that that human being would ride to their rescue like a white knight in shining armor. So he rejiggered the experiment and he did it again. He threw the lab rats in, 15 minutes on average, they're sinking to the bottom. Right when they're ready to succumb, he pulls the little rat out, towels off his little fuzzy white head, whispers sweet nothings into the rat's ear, says, you're a good little rat. You can do it. And then he throws the rat back in. And the question was, on the second pass, is the lab rat gonna swim less long? Because let's face it, he just swam to muscle failure and near death like 1 minute ago. So is he gonna do less well the second time around? Is he gonna swim about the same amount of time? Because he has some hope now, and that'll maybe counteract the fact that he's really tired. Or is he gonna swim longer? What do you think? Did they swim shorter or longer? They swam 3 days. 240 times longer. That is the power of hope. And that is how we are going to get through this.
Okay, I am going to share one last thing. Thank you for being with me this whole time. A lot I needed to share with you. We're on Telegram. You can find us at AZ Super Moms on Telegram. I hope you'll join us. You don't have to be a mom. You can be a dad. You don't even have to be a parent. The only thing you need to do is love our country, love Arizona. So come on over to Arizona AZ Super Moms and join us there. Remember, also check the links below. Everything is in its totality. Yeah, whatever. Anyways, everything will be in the links below. Check that out. Last thing I need to show you, and this is probably one of the most important things, and everything that this gentleman says is things that I've learned along the way, and he confirmed all the things that I've been seeing along the way during the beginning of this whole pandemic. So check this out.
Hello, I'm Reiner Fomich, and I want to tell you about the results of the investigations of the Berlin Corona Committee to date. I've been working together with my colleagues in my firm as a trial lawyer for 27 years. I'm licensed to practice law in Germany and in California. Until COVID emerged, we exclusively represented consumers and small and medium-sized businesses against global criminal corporations such as Deutsche Bank, VW, and Kuhn & Nagel, the world's largest freight carrier. That changed after a virus previously labeled harmless was suddenly declared the cause of a global pandemic in March of 2020, and the world was suppressed with lockdowns, social distancing, and mask mandates, as well as mass PCR testing and so-called vaccinations for perfectly healthy people. No coherent explanation was ever given for this sudden change of opinion from "don't worry, this is a harmless virus" to "this is a very dangerous virus, many people will die." Instead, the governments and the mainstream media deliberately spread panic. There are several leaked internal documents of the ministries of the Interior in various countries that prove this targeted fear-mongering. This was done by a worldwide lockstep approach of continuously blasting out the alleged danger of the alleged new virus via the mainstream media. In order to make this horror story credible, it was emphasized with horrific images from Bergamo, Italy, and New York, among other places. This was to suggest to everyone that there was every reason to panic. Very strange, as one would expect a real government to try and keep the population calm if there really was an emergency. In the meantime, we have come to understand that at least until the beginning of the rollout of the so-called vaccines, there was no excess mortality anywhere. The horrific images were partly staged and partly based on gross medical malpractice. In the face of this chaotic situation, which occurred literally overnight, as if on command, our colleague Viviana Fischer and I, together with two other lawyers, founded the Corona Investigative Committee in Berlin on July 10, 2020. We did this in order to get answers to the questions to which our federal government, for reasons unknown to us at the time, was not prepared to provide answers. Above all, we wanted to know, how dangerous is the virus really? How reliable is the PCR test developed by the German professor Drosten and recommended worldwide by the WHO for detecting infections? And how much damage are the COVID measures, the anti-COVID measures, causing economically and to people's health? Let me first summarize the outcome of the Corona Committee's work to date. Since July 10th, 2020, we have consulted with about 150 distinguished scientists and experts from all around the world and from all areas of science, including health, law, economy, psychology, and psychiatry, on these questions: how dangerous is the virus, how reliable is the PCR test, and how much harm is caused by the anti-corona measures. Among these experts are Dr. Mike Yeadon, former vice president of Pfizer, Professor Luc Montagnier, Nobel laureate from France, Catherine Austin Fitz, investment banker and former deputy minister of the U.S., and also, most recently, politicians such as Sue Frost, member of the Board of Supervisors of Sacramento County in California. Now, if someone had told me a year and a half ago that the outcome of the Corona Committee's work to date would be this, I would have told them to take their pills and see their doctor. But our hearings prove the following results beyond a reasonable doubt. One, the COVID measures were never about health. We don't have a pandemic. We have a virus circulating that any intact human immune system can fight just as well as the flu. And this is true whether the virus occurred naturally or was created in a lab. Apart from that, there are very good alternative methods of treatment to prevent or treat this disease, such as vitamin C and D, zinc, possibly ivermectin and others. Two, our governments, at least almost all European governments, as well as that of the US, are not acting in the best interest of their people, but are largely under the control of the backers of the global corporations and NGOs, which are summarized by Catherine Austin Fitz as Mr. Global. This is also the term that I will be using here when I refer to those who are pulling the strings behind the scenes. How did we come to this conclusion? Well, before COVID, each of us had their own sometimes strange encounters which made us wonder if something isn't quite right, but we couldn't really put our fingers on what it was exactly. Long before COVID came on the scene, my colleagues in my firm and I had a clear sense in our work time and again that something was wrong in the German courts of law. Global corporations such as Deutsche Bank, VW, and Kuhne & Nagel seemed to be above the law in the German courts because, for example, Deutsche Bank, one of the most criminal organizations in the world, is regarded by politicians as systemically important, and thus de facto given special protection in the courts of law as well. VW gets special protection simply because they are the largest employer in the German state of Lower Saxony. Our suspicion that the German judiciary is so heavily influenced by politics that it is no longer capable of applying the applicable law to such corporations and uncovering their fraudulent activities turned out to have a real basis. The German phrase, they hang the small fry, but they let the big fish go because they're supposedly too big to fail, is reality. Based on the behavior of the German judiciary in the COVID cases, it is now clear beyond any doubt to us that this is indeed the case. German judges who decide the cases before them, not in line with the COVID panic agenda of the government, but on the basis of the applicable law, are not only put under pressure behind the scenes. Rather, this is now done openly with the arbitrary, brutal methods of an anti-democratic, even totalitarian regime. This is obviously done to send a message to the judiciary as a whole so as to prevent them from applying the applicable law and thus questioning the government line. The dramatic example of a judge in Weimar and the experts he called upon for deciding a case proves this. He had asked three experts to provide expert opinions in response to a complaint from a mother of two that her children were suffering severe physical and psychological harm in school from being forced to wear masks, to comply with social distancing, and constantly getting PCR tested. All three experts are respected professors at German universities. On April 8th, 2021, on the basis of this expert testimony, he ordered that the school and the school principal had to stop all such measures immediately. Based on the testimony of the expert witnesses, he had determined that the measures were without any factual basis, because the PCR test invented by the now highly controversial German professor Drosten is not approved for diagnostic purposes, but only for scientific purposes. And contrary to the claims of Professor Drosten, it can, in fact, under no circumstances tell us anything about infections. In addition, he had found that these COVID measures caused very serious damage to the health of the children, of which the long-term consequences are incalculable. A few weeks after the decision, due to political pressure, his house, office, and car were searched, and his computer and cell phone were seized because he was accused of a crime. The accusation of bending the law is in the air, which is a crime. But the specific accusation was not that his decision was wrong on its merits. No. In fact, it still stands unchallenged on its merits, and for a very good reason. Both a court of appeal in Portugal and an administrative court in Austria had previously come to the same conclusion, that a PCR test cannot detect infections and therefore cannot be the basis for any anti-corona measures. Instead, the accusation was that, as a family court judge, he did not have subject matter jurisdiction to decide the case. Rather, the criminal, obviously politically driven case against him, states that an administrative court has subject matter jurisdiction over such cases. However, in the meantime, several appellate court decisions in Germany have confirmed that in such cases of endangerment of a child's welfare, of course the family courts have jurisdiction and must intervene, not the administrative courts. Parallel to this, such searches and seizures were also carried out at the homes of the three expert witnesses, the lawyer who had supported the children, and a popular artist who happens to be a friend of the judge. Shortly thereafter, such searches and seizures were also conducted at the home of another respected professor. This professor is one of the world's best-known experts on vaccinations and vaccines, who have been critical of the safety and efficacy of these injections, as they are not backed up by any scientific or medical studies. How could it have come to this in a country that calls itself a democracy? Specifically, how is it that politics in Germany and in other countries, in gross violation of the Roman legal principle of audiatur et altera pars, which means hear also the other side, with the help of mainstream media exclusively spreading government propaganda and denigrating any and all dissenting opinions as right-wing, Nazi, are now enforcing COVID measures ever more harshly without any factual basis. Meanwhile, Mr. Global and his political puppets are calling for permanent lockdowns, first COVID lockdowns, then climate lockdowns, and the continued use of untested alleged vaccines not just once, but regularly recurring every 6 months, shots every 6 months. In some countries, this is already reality. I will give you the answer below, based on the Corona Committee's expert hearings, by first reporting the facts about the actual dangerousness of the virus and the reliability of the PCR test and the health and economic damage caused by the measures. Then I'll explain what plans Mr. Global is openly pursuing, as evidenced by the written and oral statements of, for example, World Economic Forum founder Klaus Schwab and Microsoft founder Bill Gates, while distracting the population from these goals with the help of the COVID pandemic. And finally, I'll explain how we, the people, can regain not only our sovereignty, but also the assets that have been stolen from us by Mr. Global for decades. First, let's take a look at the COVID measures and how they were never about health. This virus is no more dangerous than a common flu. There are indications that the original virus, allegedly first detected in Wuhan, was artificially produced in the Wuhan Institute of Virology by means of so-called gain-of-function experiments. Such experiments intend to make a virus more dangerous, in particular to cause it to jump from animals to humans. These are, in fact, experiments for the production of bioweapons. Among others, the U.S. immunologist Dr. Fauci and the aforementioned German virologist Professor Dr. Drosten were significantly involved in such gain-of-function experiments. There are a lot of things that need to be clarified, but this much is certain. The original virus has long since ceased to exist. Rather, as with every flu virus, various variants, mutations, have been documented that may spread more quickly but are far less dangerous than the original virus. And it doesn't make a difference if it was artificial or natural. In addition, however, there are considerable doubts that the virus was ever isolated in a scientifically correct manner. Many scientists assume now that the flu virus, or influenza A or B, was merely relabeled by Mr. Global into a coronavirus pandemic. Ultimately, however, none of this matters, for the question of the severity or dangerousness of the virus is easy to answer. In the meantime, even the highly controversial WHO, which is in fact controlled by its largest donors, including the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and its offshoot Gavi, which together have a stake in almost all vaccine manufacturers in the world, agrees with Professor John Ioannidis of Stanford University, one of the most cited scientists in the world. The severity of the virus, with a so-called infection fatality rate of 0.14 to 0.15%, corresponds with that of the flu. There was no excess mortality anywhere before the beginning of the so-called vaccinations. As far as there were isolated increases or spikes in mortality, for example, in Bergamo, Italy, and in New York, these are explained with massive medical malpractice. In Bergamo, predominantly very old people with pre-existing conditions in nursing homes had died. Their immune systems had previously been weakened by vaccinations, and then, in order to keep the hospitals free for the panic-stricken COVID patients, who never arrived, sick people, including influenza patients, were transferred to the elderly care homes. These then infected the weakened people there. In addition, the WHO had installed Ranieri Guerra into the Italian Ministry of Health, who falsified the data for the pandemic exercise plans. Their last pandemic exercise had not taken place in 2016, but in 2006, so that the medical professionals were unprepared. In the meantime, he is not working at the Ministry of Health anymore, but the Italian Public Prosecutor's Office is investigating him. In New York, as every year during flu season, some, but by no means all hospitals were overcrowded. On the hospital ship Comfort, with 1,000 beds available, no more than 20 to 40 beds were ever occupied. In New York, it also affected predominantly older people with pre-existing morbidities. Without the panic messages in the media, many people who would have stayed at home and cured themselves under the correct assumption that they were ill with a flu or flu-like illness stormed some of the hospitals and fell victim to either hospital germs or massive medical malpractice by, for example, intubation instead of receiving oxygen with oxygen masks, or far too high dosages of hydroxychloroquine, or being treated with dangerous medications such as remdesivir.
Of course.
Respiratory illnesses, including this one, which is now called COVID-19, are, like the flu, dangerous diseases. And of course, COVID-19, just like the seasonal flu, has individual severe courses of illness and also death. Typically, however, the immune system intercepts the virus and especially the highly toxic spike protein in the mouth and nose. It only becomes dangerous when the immune system is bypassed and the, mind you, highly toxic spike protein, but also other ingredients such as mRNA and lipids and other nanoparticles are injected directly into the body. In any case, as post-mortem examinations carried out in Germany have shown in the meantime, the people who allegedly died with or from COVID before the start of the vaccinations, with few exceptions, had all passed the average human life expectancy and or suffered from other serious pre-existing diseases. Virtually none of the people who allegedly died of COVID had actually died from COVID. 96% of the people who allegedly died of COVID in New York and Bergamo, and 85% of those in Sweden had died from completely different diseases.
How was the corona
pandemic invented? What was behind this? Based in part on the testimony of two former WHO employees and advisors, but also on the testimony of historians and investigative journalists, as well as scientists, we can now trace the following chronology. Concrete planning for the corona pandemic has been going on for at least 10 years, and this is verifiable. The corona pandemic has been a concretely planned pandemic by Mr. Global for at least 10 years. Previously, in 2009, an attempt by Mr. Global to turn the swine flu into a pandemic failed literally at the very last second. In particular, because the German lung specialist, Dr. Wolfgang Wodak, who at the time had political power as a member of the German Bundestag and the European Council, had exposed that pandemic as a mild flu. Back then, the WHO had unexpectedly changed the definition of a pandemic overnight, so that today any flu can be declared a pandemic. Until then, a pandemic was considered to be a worldwide disease with many severe illnesses and many deaths. And suddenly it was supposed to be simply a worldwide disease event without the need for many severe illnesses and many deaths. Due to this completely surprising and never explained change in definition, it was possible for the WHO, which is closely intertwined with the global pharmaceutical industry, to declare the swine flu a pandemic in 2009. The consequence of this was that expensive vaccines were produced and sold worldwide on the basis of contracts that have been kept secret to this day. These vaccines not only proved to be completely unnecessary because contrary to all the horrific announcements from the pharmaceutical industry and universities close to it, millions of deaths were allegedly going to happen worldwide if vaccination wasn't carried out, the swine flu ultimately turned out to be a mild flu. Furthermore, the vaccines led to serious health problems. Around 1,300 children in Europe, especially in the Scandinavian countries, became incurably ill with narcolepsy and are now permanently disabled. Long before the current corona pandemic, dozens of patents on the coronavirus, including the spike protein, and also on the so-called vaccines, had already been registered. Even before the outbreak of the alleged corona pandemic, American scientists were explicitly advertising investments in corona vaccines to potential investors. In October of 2019, before the corona pandemic rolled out in March 2020 with lockdowns, social distancing, mask mandates, and finally the so-called vaccines, a final exercise took place in New York under the title Event 201. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the World Economic Forum, and the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security were involved. Shortly thereafter, An outbreak of what is now known as COVID-19 allegedly occurred for the first time in Wuhan, China, due to an allegedly novel coronavirus. A short time later, however, the excitement died down in China and the alleged novel disease had been brought under control. Mr. Global, however, used the Wuhan incident as a springboard, so to speak, to set in motion his long-planned corona pandemic. The staging of the pandemic with the help of the Drosten PCR test. This is the centerpiece. While all politicians and physicians worldwide, among them also the virologist Professor Drosten, as well as the mainstream media, were still reassuring the citizens and explaining that the virus from China would, just like a mild flu wave, not be noticed by the vast majority of the people, that no special measures needed to be taken, in particular that masks were completely unnecessary and pointless, Professor Dr. Drosten, whose academic background is now highly doubtful, invented a PCR test with which COVID-19 infections could allegedly be detected. This was at the beginning of January of 2020, while he was telling everyone that there was nothing to worry about. In two papers, the contents of which were disseminated worldwide by the WHO, he made two false claims, deliberately false, as has since been established. Two false claims that were crucial to the pandemic. First, he claimed that there are asymptomatic infections, that is, that everyone should be afraid of every perfectly healthy person showing no symptoms because he or she could be infected with COVID-19 and be potentially dangerous, contagious. Secondly, he claimed his PCR test, as the gold standard, could detect concrete contagious infections with COVID-19. Now, asymptomatic infections with respiratory viruses such as influenza or corona do not exist. As most recently proven by a study conducted with 10 million subjects in Wuhan in late 2020, and as Drosten also knew when he published this. And the PCR test invented by Nobel Prize winner Carey Mullis is neither approved nor suitable for diagnostic purposes. This is because it cannot distinguish between living and dead viral fragments, and it also tests positive for fragments of a virus left over from the immune system's fight against the flu or cold that has long since passed. In particular, the test cannot determine whether a whole virus, fragments are not enough anyway, has entered cells and is replicating there. Drosten knew all this and had explicitly stated 6 years earlier in a newspaper interview concerning the MERS virus, which is another coronavirus, that a positive test had no meaning, but that completely healthy people could also test positive. Virtually overnight, for reasons that have not yet been fully resolved, but that suggest an involuntary early start to this pandemic, Mr. Global, through the WHO politicians and mainstream media, suddenly changed his mind. Mr. Global put pressure on the WHO to quickly declare a public health emergency of international concern. Public health emergency of international concern. According to the freely invented rules of the WHO, such an international health emergency is the only basis on which completely new, untested drugs, in this case so-called vaccines, can be used on humans. Usually, the development and approval of a new drug takes at least 8 to 10 years. At the first emergency meeting in February of 2020, those present could not agree to declare this fake public health emergency of international concern because there were no cases. Nevertheless, because of the allegedly highly dangerous situation, the group agreed to meet again 2 weeks later. At that second emergency meeting, the public health emergency of international concern was actually declared. What had changed? Well, nothing. However, Professor Drosten had made his PCR test available to the WHO. And with the help of this test, the cases needed for the declaration of a fake had been created. Today, it must be assumed that the proclamation of the public health emergency of international concern and subsequently all COVID measures were based solely upon completely meaningless false positive test results. First of all, a PCR test per se cannot detect infections contagious infections under any circumstances, as I just explained. Above all, however, Drosten had set up his test in such a way that it was guaranteed to generate false positives. This is because of the so-called cycles of amplification, which one needs to evaluate the results of the test. That is, the machine into which the swabs are placed enlarges the molecules that are otherwise invisible to the human eye in many cycles, so-called cycles of amplification, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, etc. There's now a consensus that anything over 24 cycles is completely unscientific and therefore useless. Therefore, the Frankfurt Health Department doesn't take test results of more than 24 cycles into consideration at all. And Dr. Mike Yeadon, formerly of Pfizer, has stated, in agreement, by the way, with Dr. Fauci, that more than 35 cycles results in at least 97% false positives. And the Drosten test, which served as a blueprint for the vast majority of tests subsequently performed worldwide, in that test, 45 cycles of amplification were used.
This was followed,
always accompanied by the panic orchestra of the mainstream media and the vast majority of politicians, in quick succession by the COVID measures such as a lockdown, which had been invented shortly before in China, social distancing, mask mandates, and finally, the so-called vaccines. These alleged vaccines are, in reality, gene therapeutic experiments on unsuspecting humans, because there was no valid informed consent. It should be emphasized at this point that every invasive medical intervention is a bodily injury or battery, unless the patient explicitly consents to it. And his consent is invalid if he is not informed correctly and completely. That is, about the fact that no medical studies have been conducted, there's only an emergency use authorization, and about the numerous very serious side effects that have become known in the meantime. This concept of informed consent is the most important result of the Nuremberg trials of 1946. However, it was precisely these injections, designated by way of deception as vaccines, with substances that had not previously been tested in scientific studies for their safety and efficacy, that had been Mr. Global's goal from the very beginning. The subsequent steps ordered after the proclamation of the fake lockdown, social distancing, compulsory masking served only to make the population believe in a danger that didn't exist, to unsettle and disorient them, and thus make them so compliant that they would finally consent to the so-called vaccines as the only means of obtaining protection or immunity against the disease.
There is no reason
for the use of these vaccines. This is because, as stated above, there is no COVID pandemic at all, only a PCR test pandemic. Apart from that, there are highly effective and completely harmless alternative preventive and curative treatments as outlined above. Even worse, the vaccines are completely ineffective, as the example of Israel shows particularly dramatically. There, 86% of the people treated in hospitals for COVID are double vaccinated. And the vaccines are highly dangerous. Through a whistleblower, it has become known that the numbers of deaths after vaccination in one of the U.S. registers have been falsified. Conservative estimates now arrive at least 500,000 deaths after vaccination since the beginning of the vaccine rollouts.
In addition, there are
other serious side effects such as neurological disorders, thromboses, myocarditis, and more. For the fall, winter, and coming spring, experts expect severe problems for those vaccinated when they encounter the so-called wild virus in the form of a cold or flu virus, due to ADE, that's a cytokine storm, autoimmune diseases, and more severe cases of thrombosis, among others. Since these vaccines damage the immune system, not only will each subsequent booster cause more damage, but precisely the contact with the so-called wild virus will as well. All the massive side effects that have occurred in the meantime were known to the American CDC long before the vaccine rollout began. Worse yet, as evidenced by the now disclosed contents of both the manufacturer's documents submitted to the EMA, the European Medical Agency, and the manufacturer's secret contracts with nation states, the manufacturers do not know whether their so-called vaccine is effective. They do not know it. Nor do they know if it is dangerous. But they demand immunity from nation states in the event that claims are made against them for vaccine injuries. And they also explicitly demand that if there are alternative methods of treatment, which do, of course, make vaccines completely unnecessary, their experimental products must still be purchased.
Finally, let's take a look at the
plans of Mr. Global and the controlled politicians and how these plans can be prevented. Amazingly, anyone can read what Mr. Global and his puppets, such as Klaus Schwab, the founder of the World Economic Forum, or Bill Gates, the Microsoft founder and world's largest vaccine investor, are up to. It is all out in the open. For many years, following in his father's footsteps, who was a convinced eugenicist, Bill Gates has been talking about the need to dramatically reduce the world population. For years, he has been in the headlines again and again for using alleged vaccines in Africa and India, which in reality led to the sterilization of women and girls. Klaus Schwab goes in the same direction and spells this out, for example, in his book, The Great Reset, and demands beyond that, supported by the current Pope, by the way, a world government under the UN, which has, in the meantime, been brought under control by the WEF. This is to be achieved by creating as much worldwide chaos as possible in the form of pandemics, wars, including civil wars, and natural disasters, so that the world population becomes convinced that the national governments are overwhelmed and only a world government can help. At the same time, Schwab calls for the shifting of all wealth to Mr. Global so that in 2030, no one, except of course Mr. Global, will still own anything, but will supposedly be happy with that. In addition, and this is the central building block in Mr. Global's strategy, cash is to be abolished and replaced by a digital currency. This will be allocated to or taken away from every person in the world, who can then also be found anywhere at any time by various tracking systems. This is to be done by a single central world bank. Quite obviously, therefore, this is in particular the opinion of the psychologists and psychiatrists whom the Corona Committee has heard. When it comes to Mr. Global and his puppets, we're dealing with psychopaths and sociopaths. And here's another important piece of information. Through the WEF, initiated by Klaus Schwab in 1971, Mr. Global has been training his own puppets since 1992 through the Young Global Leaders Program. Angela Merkel and Bill Gates were among the first class to graduate, the class of 1992. Even a large number of current leaders, politicians, predominantly weak personalities with, however, mostly well-trained rhetorical skills, also come from this program, including Macron in France, Kurz in Austria, Justin Trudeau in Canada, Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, but also the German Health Minister Jens Spahn and the EU Commission head Ursula von der Leyen. Against this background, which increasingly more people are recognizing, very large legal disputes have been set in motion or are now being set in motion in India, in South Africa, in the US, in Canada, and in France, among others. Their goal is to hold those who are responsible for this pandemic accountable under both civil and criminal law. This also includes that the assets that have been taken away from the world's population by Mr. Global and the global corporations and NGOs controlled by him, not only since COVID, but already for decades, are returned. In those cases where there are no clear criminal...
This has been a long show, and I apologize, but I thought it was really important that I show you what's happened. And this man just ties it up all in a bow and presents it very nicely. So there you go. Thank you so much for listening on the show. Make sure I get Rumbles, likes, subscribe. Please subscribe, share, do the Rumble, subscribe, share, and like. This is really one of the most important programs I could ever give you. So... The key to everything is these fake audit, these fake elections that place someone in positions of power, and then this fake pandemic that was all manufactured. And we've suffered the consequences of that. And you've had loved ones die, and I've had loved ones die. So this is your red pill moment. I'm sorry that I had to be the one to red pill you, but this is your red pill moment. What are you going to do with it?